This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back. This is BFM 89.9. It is 20 minutes past 7. In about half an hour, we'll talk to Dr. Hamidin Abdul Hamid, research fellow at the Ilam Centre, for a roundup of all the latest political developments. And we've also got a poll on Twitter asking all Malaysians, will Parliament pass Budget 2021 to the next stage? Four choices: yes with broad support, yes with narrow support, no, and D, don't know. But in the meantime, APEC.
Yeah, because Malaysia hosted the first ever virtual APEC leaders meeting last Friday. APEC, of course, stands for Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation and comprises 21 economies in the Pacific Rim across four continents. The APEC chair is held on a rotating basis, and the last time Malaysia chaired it was in 1998. Hey, that was like the last financial crisis, just in time for this financial crisis. Timing's kind of ironic. But anyway, this is a big deal for our country. But the pandemic threw a span into what would traditionally be an event full of international fanfare. This year, instead of the usual group photo op of leaders wearing the national costume of the host country, the photo was taken with a virtual backdrop of the Prime Minister's office.
Yeah, the meeting was not unfruitful because the leaders issued the KL Declaration and agreed upon the APEC Putrajaya Vision 2040. So what is the significance of these outcomes for the international trading community? For some thoughts on the key takeaways, we speak to Aidona Jen Ayub, Deputy Director of the Khazanah Research Institute. Thanks for joining us, Jen. Let's start with the broad context of APEC. How important is this forum in the broader multilateral landscape, especially where trade is concerned?
Basically, APEC is it's a diverse group of countries that cooperate on a voluntary, non-binding and consensus basis. In that sense, APEC doesn't have much teeth if we compare them to other initiatives in other international organizations because the outcomes are not necessarily legally binding. But the value that APEC has is in building consensus among a relatively large number of countries, which is why we should always keep APEC developments in our radar, because they can travel from non-binding commitments into binding commitments, for example, in trade agreements. I'll give you an example of one trade agreement. So, particularly the people in BFM would be familiar with the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. The precursor of that agreement was actually the Trans-Pacific Strategic Economic Partnership Agreement, which was signed by countries such as Brunei, Chile, New Zealand, and Singapore. And that agreement had specific reference to wanting to support the wider liberalization process in APEC. So that is one example of how APEC ideals or aspirations or non-binding work that has been done gets translated into legally binding agreements.
So Jen, with that in mind, what do you think are the most significant takeaways from the APEC meetings last week?
One thing that I did note is the APEC Putrajaya Vision 2040, which, as I mentioned, was one of the key takeaways that was supposed to happen in the Malaysian chairmanship. So it was to chart the future of APEC, mainly to seek an open, dynamic, resilient and peaceful Asia-Pacific community in 20 years. But what that means in practice and defining that vision will have to happen in New Zealand's chairmanship next year. So New Zealand is tasked to come up with a comprehensive implementation plan next year, which, given the pandemic and how it, like I mentioned, it's hard to have these type of conversations virtually, I'm not sure if New Zealand will be able to conclude that type of conversation even.
And Jen, we're going to have a new US president. How does that bode? Is that good or bad for the international trading community?
To a certain extent, yes. But how the US wants to structure that remains to be seen clearly. Because in the sense, the Trump administration has come up with a lot of curveballs that people who believe in a rules-based trading system didn't expect, particularly from the US. So in that sense, I wouldn't say there will be a complete reset, because there were already signs that, for example, the US wasn't happy with how China was participating in the global economy and they wanted to change things. So those changes may still happen, but in how, in what way, we would still need to, yeah, we would still need to look out for it. I would say cautiously optimistic.
Thanks, Jen. That was Aidona Jen Ayo, Deputy Director of the Khazanah Research Institute. I want to reference my discussion with Tan Sri Rebecca Santamaria. She's the APEC Secretariat from... she's a Malaysian, and she was the former, I think, Sec Gen of MITI. Now, she's the APEC Secretariat head. And what is interesting for her and us in particular is because Malaysia is the host, right? And what APEC tries to do when Malaysia is the host is it adopts the country's issues and takes it upon itself to try and solve them, but on a non-binding, collaborative, discussive framework. So it's more soft approach.
But does it work, though, Chuang? That was my issue, right?
Because there's a lot of analysis which could then lead to paralysis.
Yeah.
Because a lot of talk but no action makes Jack a dull boy.
Which is the case very much so for any of these collaborative kind of organizations, right? Because APEC is not like the EU.
It's not ASEAN either.
Yeah, it's not ASEAN. They don't have a bank. Well, they don't run their economies together as one single unit. Neither are they seen as one political union. So it always goes back to whether these PACs or whether these group of nations can actually organize themselves. And if you take that soft approach, then does anything get done?
Especially when you've got 21 member economies, not members, but economies, right? And of those 21 member economies, four, bear mentioning, Japan, Russia, America and China, right? All of whom are displaying overt signs of protectionism and anti-globalization. Exactly the mantra and the mandate that APEC wants. Because APEC wants a freer flow of goods and services and of people to make the world a better place.
Supposedly.
And but music plays.
But I think what was interesting about this APEC virtual conference, and this is the funny point, right? Apparently, only Putin and Trump didn't use the APEC backdrop. Even Xi Jinping followed the protocol. This kind of says who are the players and who are the followers and who are not. But aside from that, if you look into the details of APEC, they did have this Putrajaya vision, right? And the point is, it aspires for an open, dynamic, resilient and peaceful Asia-Pacific community by 2014 for the prosperity of all its people and future generations. Now, that sounds really great, but
that PR people would have written.
Yeah, but what does it mean and how are they going to implement it is always the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah, because it's discussive and collaborative. I recall from my discussion with Tan Sri Rebecca that I think Malaysia's goals are set on three key pillars, right? I think digitization is one big issue. Inclusivity, not just on gender grounds, but in terms of social strata as well, is another one. And then, of course, there's the business as well. So, obviously, that is the key mandate for APEC's Secretariat going forward. Up next, we'll talk to Daniel Ives, Managing Director for Equities Research at Wedbush Securities, on what's driving Tesla shares. That's happening after the 7:30 news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.